The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Look, her hand.
Seemingly with a life of its own, it was spidering up her chest to her throat. It stopped and gripped the square metal pendant.
Take.
This? Ryan touched it with his fingers. A nod of the head, slow and painful, answered him. He carefully pulled it up, wincing as he realized it was stuck to her with dried blood. He peeled it loose and over the tangled gray hair.
Open.
He turned it in his hand. The workmanship reminded him vaguely of silver he'd seen down in the southwest. Indian crafts. For a moment, he couldn't see how to get inside it.
Open.
I'm trying, but it's stiff. Don't want to break it when... Here.
Rona said to find you. Find you. Quest, look after.
Slowly, Ryan opened the locket and found that it contained two things. A tiny ringlet of blonde hair and a picture. A faded, pale brown portrait.
Who is it?
Your son, Ryan Carter. It is your son.
10 years ago, Ryan encountered a woman named Sharona Carson. Now, in the hell-blasted ruins of New York City, his past has come back. But before Ryan and his companions can come to terms with this, they must first deal with a much more immediate problem.
Scabbies!
Head for the exit!
There's too many of them!
Christy!
Relationships are made, bonds are tested, and death is faced head-on. Come Deathlands number 13, Seedling, everything will change.
Deathlands 13, Seedling, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting June 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advanced copy of Seedling. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Trafficking in human beings. One of the greatest evils on earth. Children sold into slavery. Women sold into prostitution.
No, please don't.
You wanted to come to America. Now you have to pay the price.
No! No!
A desperate cry for help draws Mac Bolan into a world where educated, attractive foreign women are kidnapped and forced to work within top American companies as industrial spies.
Candy Graham.
What? Who are you?
Land Shark. The trail leads to an Indian businessman with ties to the Chinese and Islamic terrorists, hijacking high-tech cargo for a covert weapons program.
It's Al-Aksari! Run!
Don't run! Don't run!
Yeah, don't run. Stay exactly where you are.
With fellow Stony Man warrior Yakov Katsanilanbogan by his side, Bolan goes from L.A. to Calcutta, spreading a message in blood. Doing business with the Chinese could be fatal. And now, no one is safe.
He's only one man!
Wrong, Wong.
Mac Bolan number 87, Caged. 7 unabridged hours in graphic audio. The movie in your ears.
Mac Bolan 87, Caged, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting June 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advanced copy of Caged. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your ears.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Nanette Savard, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Casey Jones, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 11, Time Nomads. Mildred Wyeth was at the most wonderful party of her life. The only dark spot was a nagging headache that lurked somewhere behind her eyes, giving occasional stabs of pain that left her feeling oddly weak and disoriented. Everyone was there. Martin and Coretta both smiled at her as she walked by and into the parlor where the buffet was laid out. Andrew and Jesse were involved in a heated discussion, both in danger of spilling their plates of gumbo on the carpet. Mildred moved up to the buffet table. Ralph was helping himself to some potato salad.
Can I serve you, Mildred?
No, thanks. I'll just pick a little.
Sure?
Sure. Is it true that Jack and Bobby are coming along later?
Surely is. Just about the biggest gathering we've seen. Your pa around?
Mm-hmm. He's out in the garden with Mom.
That's a pretty pistol you got there, Mildred. Not looking for trouble, are you? Not here, among friends.
It's a ZKR 551, Reverend. Six-shot, chambered to take a standard Smith & Wesson 38.
Is that the one you used in the Olympics? Looks kind of different.
Guess it does, at that.
Through the window, she could see a couple playing guitars by the barbecue. A tall, good-looking man and an attractive girl.
Who are they?
That's John and Buffy. They're going around with Bobby, playing at all his whistle stops. Not bad at all. If you'll excuse me, I need to have a word with Rosa about the bus schedule.
Sure, Ralph.
Mildred strolled through the open doors, savoring the fresh air, catching the scent of orchids, hearing cicadas in the bushes. The garden was familiar, and yet had features that she didn't quite recognize. Parts were bigger, and some of the angles at the corners seemed different. She glimpsed her mother near a small ornamental fountain. She waved to her, but got no response. For a moment, Mildred felt a strange, painful sensation, as though something had stirred deep within her brain. Like a tiny metal orb revolving in the frontal lobe above the eyes. It was sharp enough to make her wince and close her eyes. She closed them, then jumped as someone laid a hand on her shoulder.
Oh!
Sorry, Millie.
Uncle Josh, her father's younger brother, was the only one who ever called her Millie. Like her father, Josh was a minister.
It's all right. Goodness, it's cold. I feel frozen. Really frozen.
Your father wants to speak to you, Millie. Out in the corner, under the magnolia.
That was always his favorite place. Before.
Over there. See him? With some new friends.
I didn't know he had any new friends. Who are they?
Can't say I cottoned to them too much, Millie. Not the four men or the lady.
I'll go look.
The light seemed dimmer, but she could make out the short, dark curls on top of her father's head. Just visible above the back of the striped chair. She could also see the five strangers that Josh had mentioned to her. The girl caught her eye first. She was very tall, close to 6 feet, with a mane of the most wonderful hair that Mildred had ever seen. The deep, fiery crimson seemed to glow in the dim evening light. She half turned and smiled at Mildred, revealing eyes the color of melting emeralds. She was dressed in khaki overalls, tucked into dark blue leather western boots, which had silver points chiseled into the toes and silver spread-winged falcons embroidered on the sides. Next to her was a well-built man with a mop of black curly hair